You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome in to Extra Innings, brought to you by Next Levels Training Center in Greenville. I'm Dave Richmond, along with ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, dude?
Doing well, Dave. How are you on this lovely Sunday night? It's not even dark yet, and we're after 7 o'clock.
I'm so excited because I know that you told me you have your brooms out. The Pirates get another sweep, and we're going to be talking about that. Right, Bubba Rosenbaum?
Yeah, I'm back this week. I survived Disney. My bank account did as well, I think. But, yeah, it's good to be back talking Pirate baseball. It was an interesting sweep, but you'll take sweeps any way you can get them for sure, and we'll dive into how it happened here in just a few minutes.
I'm just happy that Bubba didn't need any bail money, and if I did, I would call our guest, the play-by-play voice of the ECU Baseball Pirates, Corey Glure. How are you, man?
I would have not bailed Bubba out of Disney jail.
Oh, wow.
I left him spinning with Goofy, that awful dog, and then he'd be stuck in the It's a Small World ride.
I knew you were going to say that. Yes.
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 That's why you're on. It's a small
world. Corey, when I think of It's a Small World, I think of Rodney Carrington, the comedian, back in the early 2000s or maybe even the late 90s, but I remember a college roommate and I had that downloaded, and he couldn't stop talking about how annoying It's a Small World is.
Hey, Kyle, I think about Robin Harris, the comedian, talking about Bebe's Kids, which I can't talk about because it's a family show. But if you remember Bebe's Kids, you know who talks about Small World in that routine.
They don't die, they multiply.
That's exactly right. That's one of my favorite comedians. God rest his soul, he died way too early. Back in the late 80s. But anyway, Corey Glure, we're not talking about the 80s. We're talking about 2021, our baseball Pirates getting the job done. And I tell you what, this weekend, definitely have to make sure that I took some extra blood pressure medicine, Corey, not to get too personal about myself, but it was definitely everything you wanted to be if you're a baseball fan, but maybe not for if you're a Pirates fan, right?
I mean, it's 3 wins, so I would hope that folks are happy about that. I mean,
I'm happy about that. I mean, like, especially Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the rule of what you want, what you're expecting here in a college baseball team. They got a sweep over a team that is scuffling right now, but should be doing some okay things in their conference. And now we'll be keeping an eye on what Illinois State does once they get Missouri Valley play going. You don't have to look that far up and down the world of college baseball to understand how challenging it is to win 3 weekend. I don't care who you're playing. Like, teams lose to bad teams or mediocre teams every single day in this sport. So the fact that we're talking about the 4th sweep of the year already in 5 weekends, that is something that not many clubs around the country can claim. I don't care who the opponent is, and I don't care how they looked through these 3 games. The fact that they did do this, especially after Wednesday, was this is a feather in the cap that not many schools around the country can claim.
Yeah, and Illinois State, good program. Just a couple years ago, battled Louisville there in the regionals, and one of the favorites in the Missouri Valley, which is a pretty good baseball conference, actually. Corey, we'll obviously break down game by game, but one thing that I do want to ask you about with the perceived depth we have with our bullpen, are you surprised with the amount of runs we gave up today and Wednesday?
Wednesday was certainly not a good day, and everyone who was there would tell you that. So that was surprising. I think I don't know how much we're going to be talking about UNCW in that game. I think a lot of folks would be happy to leave that in the past, but yeah. That's one of the worst games they played, and certainly the worst game they played this year, and one of the worst in a couple of years. So, I think that I would like to think that's a blip on what this team will be capable of doing. And we've seen 19 games in. That's a pretty clear blip so far this season, what happened in UNCW. In terms of today, You know, there were not a ton of moments today where I thought the Pirates were pitching bad, frankly. I mean, I thought Carter Spivey got as much poor luck his way today in his
years
than I've seen all weekend and seen in a long time. He got what he was looking for on almost every hitter and every pitch he threw, and it didn't ever work out for him. So past that, I don't know if today was much more about the pitchers giving up the amount of runs that they did, as opposed to there were some moments of really poor defensive focus that opened the door a bunch for Illinois State, and they were able to take advantage of it, much like ECU did in the flip side today. So I think Wednesday could be a concern with what happened there at the pitching staff. Today I didn't come out of that feeling as though that sort of thing. Like today was a sloppy game, and it felt like an 11:30 start on a Sunday or right off the bat. So I don't walk out of today worried about the bullpen and how many runs they gave up. Wednesday the drive back was certainly a head scratcher, but not after today.
Yeah. Do you think Wednesday was, you know, a lot to do with, obviously, you know, you hate to use this term, but to quote our friends in Raleigh, NC State, it's Wilmington Super Bowl. It's a rivalry for both teams, but for Wilmington, it's even a bigger deal to play East Carolina than it is for East Carolina to play Wilmington, while it's still a rivalry for us. And it was at their place. It was at Brooks Field. It's the only matchup this year. They it's a signature win for them. We're a top 10 team. We had been hot, beat Duke, swept Charlotte. Do you think we were just almost due for a letdown and Wilmington played their best game of the year?
Yeah, I think that's not a bad way to look at it. I think it is unsustainable to play at high of a level as ECU did heading into that game. And so eventually there was going to be just a step backward, and add into that UNCW, who was playing well heading into that game. And yes, that matchup is circled. And once the Pirates got into the top 10 of the rankings heading into that game, I think it got circled even more boldly. So I felt the start of that game, there wasn't really much of a, like, you know, there wasn't a lack of attention from that team. I think it what felt weird about that game was once their starting pitcher, Jacob Schaefer, he started settling in, and suddenly that game would blitz to the fifth inning. It felt like we were in for a long night there, just time-wise. The first inning took 40 minutes. Like, I mean, you felt like it was going to be one of those drag them out type of midweek games, and then you blinked and you're in the fifth inning. And it seemed as though the Pirates were almost caught off guard by how quick the game moved into the middle of the contest. And by that point, they couldn't figure out what to do with Jacob Schaefer. That was a 4-2 game up until the middle innings, and that Tristan Kimmel pitched two scoreless innings, and it looked like he was settling things down, but he ran out of gas. And then there was never really a moment once that point moved on where you felt as though ECU was going to be able to kick it into gear, like, because UNCW just completely snatched away any semblance of that game and the flow going the way of the Pirates. So it happens over the course of a season. It took over a dozen games into the year for it to happen this year. So I think you can look at that in many different ways. I think we're hopeful for is that we're looking back on that game as an outlier and not necessarily, you know, a sign of midweek to come over the next 2 weeks.
One of the things, Corey, that game on Wednesday, when you didn't see Gavin Williams come in those early to mid innings when it was still competitive, you really felt like, it was just a matter of time before he was inserted into the weekend rotation. It wasn't if, but when. So just talk about Gavin going into or with Friday's start. Obviously not his best, but at the same time, he pitched well enough to give the Pirates a chance, and Coach Godwin alluded to that in his post-game remarks.
Yeah, I think that has been a long time coming for him. It's something we mentioned a lot on the air, where that's his first Friday night start. And it felt like, I mean, you just kind of look back through his career and you're kind of so floored that that's his first Friday night start. but you know, he was ready to be that guy in 2020, and then the season shut down, and then he was ready to be this year, and then an injury prevented him to start off this year. So I had gotten a kind of a heads up before the UNCW game that Gavin wasn't going to be available anyway. The plan was already in place, like that Gavin would be the Friday guy. And I think you can go through as many games as you want, and you can have the greatest stuff in the world. When you're making your first career Friday night start, even 4 years into your season, into your career, like Gavin was, there will still be nerves involved. And that did come into play in that first inning. And then from that point on, he was able to really settle down and move into the middle innings of that game. So I think you can be encouraged with what you got from Gavin on Friday night. And then what Cole Moore did following him in the bullpen was even more special. So that was a theme this weekend, where starting pitcher kind of gave you enough to get the job done, and then most of the arms out of the bullpen came in and really locked things down.
And Corey, one of the things that I'm reminded of, and going back to Kyle's point, coach is not saying like putting our in-state rivals down, but his big picture is to win a national championship. And Wednesday night really was horrible, but there's 56 games, and the good news is we bounce back and get the sweep this weekend. But it's not that you don't want to beat Wilmington. I know the three of us on the podcast and four with you, you want to beat Wilmington really bad. But in the big scheme of things, the ultimate prize is to win the national championship.
I think the biggest thing that can come out of that UNCW game was the day after. And that we heard a lot about what this team did after they lost to Old Dominion a few weeks ago, and what the next day was like, the aftermath of losing an extra inning game at home, that you had a lead late and you let slip away. This is a very different feeling game on Wednesday. And the message on Thursday was very little. It was, you know, figuring things out in terms of what went wrong physically. It was, do you know what it means to wear that uniform and play baseball for this university? That's what Thursday was heading into this weekend. They did a full uniform workout session, which is rare, that you don't get that a lot. But what Coach Godwin wanted to kind of teach these guys, or at least reteach them, was if you want to wear that uniform, you've got to be tougher than what you were Wednesday night. And he felt that still didn't quite get through on Friday, despite the win. And then Saturday and today, it did show up, particularly offensively. So it's a lot about, you know, you talk a lot about, you know, struggles of guys at the plate or struggles of some of the arms out of the bullpen. A lot more of this is in between the ears this year. And so that was what the message was heading into this weekend, was focus in on what it means to play baseball for this program, because this program is capable of doing some really great things.
Yeah, speaking of, you mentioned that Old Dominion game, having to lead late and then blowing it. Similar situation Friday, leading by two runs going into the ninth, and end up in extra innings. Talk about how the guys, you know, did blow the lead and, you know, ended up having to go into extra innings, but, you know, they found a way to win the ball game.
Yeah, I think, you know, I after the game, Cliff was still frustrated with how his team played. I didn't see it as, you know, as I guess problematic as he did. I'm also not the coach, but I thought they were up against a very good pitcher in Colton Johnson and could not really figure out much to pick up on him. And then they go to their best reliever, Colin Wyman. He was just as good. I honestly thought it was a case of two very good pitchers that Illinois State has, maybe their two best pitchers, that they brought in on that Friday night, and the Pirates just finding a way to scrape enough out. You would have lost a lot of money if you said that C.J. Mayhew would come in and blow the lead in the ninth in a two-run game. He did pitch Wednesday, and so I wonder if there was a little bit after Wednesday that was kind of lingering for him, physically or otherwise. But then he came in today and slammed the door in three innings. So that, I think today was a big outing for him, because he pitched so quickly after Friday, after pitching on Wednesday. So outside of Mayhew's outing in the ninth, the pitching could not have been much better. And there was, you know, a couple jams that, you know, Gavin worked out of a jam in the third inning, I believe. And then Matt Bridges came on, closed it up in the ninth inning to keep it tied with a go-ahead run at third. Then Ryder Giles wins it in extra innings and works out of bases loaded in the 10th. I thought in a game like that, yeah, it's a stressful game, and you need your pitchers to come up with the biggest pitch to close out scenarios like that. And that's what ECU got by and large throughout that night, even though they didn't get it to finish out in regulation.
And what about go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to make a quick point, Bubba, back to you. The fact that not many people that I've heard of, we have, but and you have, I know, but the schedule that East Carolina's had so far has been really difficult. Some people may not know the brand names teams like Illinois State, who, I mean, they were really close to coming to Greenville and playing East Carolina, hosting their first Super Regional 2 years ago, as the interview we had with their coach. And then we have the very fact of you have Wilmington's probably going to be a regional team. Charlotte's much improved this year. Duke, has a chance to be a regional team. There's a lot of teams we're playing already in non-conference that are going to be regional teams, you feel like, or they have a good chance to make a regional.
The NCAA has not come out with their RPI yet, or at least their official RPI. But Warren Nolan does have their RPI, and ECU is fourth in the nation right now. Or maybe it's five now. They're four or five right now in the country. They have 8 quad one wins. Because Charlotte is in quad one here, and they jump back into quad one here. UNCW is quad one, even with a loss. Old Dominion is in quad one with that loss. And so right now, the strength of schedule that the Pirates have played is top 10 in the country in terms of difficulty. And I think that would surprise some people looking at some of the names that have come in over these weekends. But these teams were brought in for a reason. The Pirates did not just reach out and cast a wide net and bring folks in. They looked at all of these past RPIs, you know, past conferences, what these programs and what these leagues do in terms of strength of schedule. And so they bring in Rhode Island, who is up there in terms of RPI, and they bring in an Illinois State. They'll bring in St. John's coming up this weekend. Like, you know, these are done very, very specifically once heading into conference play, and the conference has struggled this year. And so this will loom even larger, this non-conference play, and a record that sits as gaudy as it does right now for East Carolina, because there will be weekends coming up in league play where the RPI will not be able to improve much. And so what this program's been able to do in the first month and a half of this season is really bolster a resume. The names might not be flashy, but trust me, it will stand out when we're talking about this team in May.
Something else I don't believe we've even referenced yet is on the weekend that Thomas Francisco had, and we'll talk about it on the whole in a little bit, but the game on Friday, you know, going into Friday's game, I guess, the first 16 games, he had hit safely in 15 of those, but he only had that one home run. That was his only extra base hit, so that was a little surprising. Everything else had been a single, but on Friday – 2 home runs for Franny, and he had a heck of a game.
And both of them were hit into a very fierce wind. The first one was a low liner, and he was just able to get it over Jeremy Gaines, the right fielder, who might have actually aided it over the fence, or at least he ran into the ball in the process of jumping up. I think it still might have found a way over, but it certainly hit either him or the fence before bouncing over. And then he drilled one to the scoreboard, and that one had some more loft on it, but it had such velocity on it. I'm sorry, you have a friend back there, Dave. To see him run into a couple like that, you don't necessarily need him right now to be your power threat, because there are a couple that have formed here over the last, you know, 3 weeks. But if you get that from him as one of your more consistent hitters, then this lineup really broadens out the possibilities of what they could do. And you saw that Friday. He was the offense for, you know, 10 innings on Friday night before Kidell had the walk-off in the 11th. So to get that from you know, the second best hitter on this team right now. No one's, frankly, Connor Norby's in a stratosphere on his own at the moment. And then Thomas Francisco, he's gone the opposite way a ton this year. And now to have his second and third home runs of the season when the Pirates needed a couple of booms and their bats on Friday, that was nice to see.
No question, Corey, with Francisco. I think it may have been Brian Packard a year or two ago who said that I was bragging about Francisco's bat, you know, and you wondered about, obviously, he's a great hitter and coach. I know with Coach Godwin is a hitting coach, so it's putting the ball in play and scoring runs, however we have to win the games. But you've been wondering this year about when we're going to see the long ball, and to get see that back-to-back home runs on Friday night was very special. And I think we may have a new player of the week from PGX, gloves.com, so we'll do that in a little bit. But it's been Connor Norby up to this point, so we'll see if Franny can get that or not. But I think he's a strong candidate. I'll just give you that hint, Corey, for the PGX.
What a tease, Dave.
Yeah.
Corey's been a long time in between drinks from Friday night to now for me. It was Norby that had the winning run in the 11th, right?
Yeah, he got on to start the 11th. He got bunted over, and then they intentionally walked Francisco, the only walk of the night drawn by that lineup. And then Kidell had the winner to left.
Okay.
That was so cool. I think that it took me forever to get sleep that night on Friday night because it was just such an emotional win. And the very fact that we talk about good teams find a way to win, and you hate to give up, like you talked about with Mayhew. It's 3-1. You feel confident that he's going to finish it out. And when all of a sudden they tie the game up, and you go to what's the 11th inning. I mean, man, that's just like it seemed like that game would never end.
Well, you mentioned kind of right off the show about how this weekend kind of rose your blood pressure a little bit, Dave. Well, you know, we're coming up here and now two weekends of four game weekends in league play. So get used to games like Friday, yes. Get used to games like kind of what the Charlotte weekend was, you know, that's coming. It's going to be much more regular coming up here for this Pirates team. It might be Tuesday is when you're going to have one of those as well in Chapel Hill. So, I mean, you're talking about 32 games in league play, and yeah, the league looks down right now, but four games in 3 days is going to bring some weird things and going to bring some tight games. And there are some great pitchers headlining some of these programs, even on some of these teams that are struggling right now. So games like Friday are coming. They're going to be coming quite a bit.
In fact, I'll call my doctor tomorrow morning to up my medicine to get ready for Tuesday night.
Probably wise.
Hey, Corey, one of the common themes in all three of these ball games, and Cliff references today in his post-game remarks, he said one thing that he'll give Illinois State a ton of credit for is how prepared they were offensively and you know, their approach. And they were committed to taking certain things away from each pitcher, and they were pretty successful at doing that. And they scratched first, I guess, in all three ball games. And to the Pirates' credit, they were able to overcome it.
They took away the fastball of Gavin Williams. They took away the fastball of Carson Wisenhunt today in the first inning. And they kind of took away a little bit of everything against Coach Maynard on Saturday to open up. Like, I mean, it was a struggle for those three guys to get locked in here. And Illinois State was poised and ready here to pounce. And they did all three games to open things up. I think the ability for Wisenhunt today to kind of take a step back, take a breath after that first inning was key for him and his development, because that's today was the first time really I've seen all year from him where he looked legitimately rattled and frustrated. That first inning did get to him, and you could tell because it was two quick outs and suddenly bam, three runs were on the board, and it was very difficult for him to stay back, engage, and finish that inning. And up until when he had a fielding error later on in the game, he had gone back to himself there. But I think a game like today is good for Carson because, like we just said, there will be more moments like this to come for him, and how he responds when he thinks something's going well and suddenly you know, with the opposing team just starts waylaying him, that's going to be vital for him to figure out how to work through. Didn't have much doubt that Jay Kuchmaner would figure out a way to do that, but of the three starting pitchers, Illinois State had probably the best handle on him all weekend long, and so it was not as sharp from him. And if he's not as sharp, not living on the edges, not getting that change up, kind of falling off the outside corner to right-handers, then he is primed to be hit. And Illinois State was able to get him quite a bit on Saturday. So I'm not terribly concerned about a guy like Kuchmaner bouncing back after a bit of a B outing from him on Saturday. But the Redbirds came in. You know, they played no midweek game. They had a whole week to scout and look, and it's a decent lineup that they brought in. It's a little bit thin at the bottom, but the top five and six in that order can hit, and so they were able to open up each and every game, and it's a credit to the Pirates to bounce back every single time this weekend to answer that.
And one of the things that enabled us to bounce back was the performance of Garrett Saylor in relief in Saturday's ball game, four tremendous innings.
He needed that. I mean, he has been looking for that all year, and we knew it was in there after seeing him last year. You know, he walked into two on, nobody out, and then he gave up a walk, but a wild pitch brought in a run and made it 5-3 in the sixth. And there's just kind of a sense in the back of your mind, like, uh-oh, with what we had seen from Garrett so far this year, he'd been lifted in the middle of at-bats a couple times already this season. Sacrifice bunt for the first out, and then he doesn't have any resistance the rest of the way. Back-to-back strikeouts to keep it a two-run game, and the Pirates would take the lead in the bottom half of that frame. And then the stuff is undeniable with what Garrett Saylor's been able to do. And so to get it cranked up today or Saturday like he was able to, I think he's one of the biggest keys for this whole weekend turning out the way it did. Because the Pirates will need him. The Pirates will need him to have maybe not necessarily four shutout innings like he did on Saturday, but he's going to be back in the mix here for late game, tight game situations. And we know he can do what he did on Saturday more regularly than what we've seen this year. And the team knows that he can do that more regularly. So he's going to get a crack at another one here, whether it's Tuesday, whether it's this weekend against St. John's. And hopefully what we saw Saturday was more of a sign of things to come from him.
Yeah, that's huge, getting his confidence where it needs to be going into league play.
Yeah, I mean, that slider is one of the best pitches this pitching staff has. And today or Saturday was the kind of the first time that slider looked like it. Like that was a special thing that he was doing on Saturday. And so, you know, we talked about the bullpen with Kyle earlier on in the show here. If you can get Saylor cooking like we saw on Saturday, then there's another option for what this team is going to need in four games in 3 days, starting in a couple of weekends.
Corey, you look at today's game. It was fun to watch. It wasn't pretty. A lot of defensive errors and, you know, a lot of runs given up on both sides. But were you nervous watching it late when they pulled it? When they pulled within one run, I never felt like we were going to lose the game. Even though we weren't playing the best, I just had confidence in the guys that we were going to find a way to win.
I don't think I was nervous at all. I'll be honest, there are not many times calling games where I'm getting nervous per se. I kind of have a different, I'm a different person. I'm a weird person, Kyle. But I felt like there was so much at times that was going haywire in today's game that it felt like even if Illinois State tied the game in the sixth inning when they grabbed four or even took the lead in the sixth inning, that there was an answer coming. So that's kind of how I thought, even with things really unraveling like they did in that sixth, and suddenly a six-run lead was down to one, I was pretty confident that, all right, say they're suddenly trailing here all of a sudden. Well, they had four innings to work with, and I felt pretty good about them responding to whatever strangeness was happening against them. So, no, nervous wasn't necessarily the thing that, I mean, there were moments that will certainly take some dissection here after today's game. And I'm sure the team will look at a few moments from today and work on things a little bit more. As I said in the broadcast, art is subjective, but this piece is probably going in the back corner of the museum because it was not pretty. But they, even when they still held on to the lead in the sixth, they still responded. So they didn't even need to be trailing or tied late in the game to answer back. And that's what good teams do. That's what really high caliber teams are able to do. When suddenly a team is back in it, when it looked like things were comfortable, you land a knockout blow, and they were able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, you're on mute.
It didn't go off mute. Sorry. Corey, I had a question as far as that pitch in the eighth inning on Friday night with Mayhew. That breaking ball is so nasty. It was like an inside. It was like I was trying to think of the batter he was facing. It was strike three. It was just like so clutch for him. That's why it was so frustrating for him, I know, for the ninth inning. But he had a big pitch there that was so clutch. And that's why it was so great to see him bounce back today, because I was like, that was just so nasty, the way that ball, like, you could see it from his vantage point. Obviously, I didn't see it from the batter's vantage point, but the way that bat, like, it was like strike three, you're out of there. Do you remember that?
Was that today or Friday you were talking about?
Friday. I'm talking about Friday night. It was like, saying that, I was just thinking about, I failed to mention earlier about how it was like the eighth inning and he had a really nasty pitch, strike three. It was like such a command there. And then the ninth inning was so like disappointing. I know from that pitch where he left, was that a breaking ball that he left high and then like it was smashed?
Yeah, I left one up to Peterson for the game tying double. I think you might be talking about Colemore there in the eighth.
Colemore, I beg your pardon. Friday.
Yeah,
Colemore. I'm sorry. Yeah,
yeah, it was perfect in his nine hitters. Yeah, he had a couple of strikeouts to end his outing. Looking, I mean, what he has so much variety on what he can throw, and when he drops the arm, that stuff moves for days, and he's able to do that. He loves dropping his arm on two strikes to try and get a little bit more of a wrinkle on what he throws. He got back-to-back strikeouts looking to end the eighth inning. I mean, I think he's a slightly overlooked right now over how this weekend's gone, with just how key he was slamming the door in a tight ball game because Illinois State tied it right after he left. But he's got some vicious, nasty stuff when he is cooking. By and large, this year he's been great.
Corey, you said you had to be out of here by 8 sharp tonight, so we'll look ahead. You got a pretty big week coming up for the Pirates. Talk about the upcoming games.
North Carolina, Tuesday night. I think this is one that a lot of folks are kind of already, when the schedule's out, they look for UNC on the schedule, and we got back-to-back weeks with them here. Powerful club. They usually have a bunch of guys in the lineup that can mash homers, and then they usually back it up with some strikeouts on the mound, and that's no different this year. They just took 2 of 3 at Boston College, which is having a great year, so that is it. They've won all 3 ACC weekends thus far, or the last 3. So this is no different, even though the coach is different here for North Carolina, that ECU is going to be seeing here coming up on Tuesday. It is going to be a team that can hit home runs, a team that usually plays pretty solid defense, and a team that has a lot of strikeout capability on the hill. And then St. John's comes in. They're having a decent year. This is a team high in our high RPI opportunity here for the Pirates. And they're kind of a mixed bag of production right now. They are decent in the lineup. They are decent on the mound. They're doing just enough to win some games. They're 9-5 right now. Nothing really blows you out of the water in terms of what they've done thus far. They do have a Wednesday game against Army, and then they'll have a quick turnaround down to Greenville for this 3-game series. But St. John's is usually a team in the discussion when it comes to the Big East, and they always seem to be a team that when they show up as an NCAA tournament at large berth, people say, why are they there? Like, I mean, it's always like, oh, it's because they're really good and no one really pays attention to what they do. So what St. John's poises to be coming in this weekend is a team that might not wow you right now, but much like Illinois State, when we look at back in May, I think we'll see St. John's, the team that was a pretty important opponent in the lineup.
Yeah, St. John's always a team that is a favorite in the Big East, the old Big East and the new Big East. They've always had a good baseball program. Pirates have faced them in the regionals before over the years. So Pirate fans should be familiar with the Red Storm of St. John's. So
they were here in the LeClaire Classic a few years ago, and that was, I mean, obviously different players now involved here, yeah. But that game was madness between these two. That was the Saturday game, and that was one of the wilder games that Clark LeClaire has ever had. I think Cliff Godwin got ejected in that game.
Called
to Tyler Smith. Like that game was nuts. And so, you know, it's fun to see these programs again, and the Big East got better this year with UConn joining the mix. So you have a team like Creighton that is very, very good. And St. John's is there as well. So, it's a chance to get some wins over a team that should be very good and should help you out in the long run, when it comes to, you know, potential seeding things and what might be coming in terms of postseason play.
Yeah, Bubba will know this. It was St. John's. We played them. Bubba, was it in the Charlottesville regional, not the one we won, but the one we lost, or was it in Chapel Hill?
We played St. John's in the Charlottesville regional back under Billy Godwin.
Okay.
And yeah, we seems like we went 1-1 against them. I don't know. And then yes, they were in that Chapel Hill regional as well. And in Chapel Hill regional, I think we had played Cornell, St. John's, and then the Tar Heels.
Yep, I thought we played them a couple times in the regional.
But a little bit more about St. John's. St. John's went 2-2 against Fordham this weekend. Lost a pair of one-run ball games. And then the previous weekend at Western Carolina, and it doesn't surprise me so much that they got swept, but the way in which they got swept,
yeah, 11-1,
11-1, 21-3, and 8-3.
Good God.
Yeah, I mean, they got blown, they had the doors blown off in Cullowhee. So, I mean, it's hard not to look at the schedule and see some results that don't wow you from St. John's. It's also easy to see that they, kind of like Illinois State, have been a ton away from home. They do have more home games than usual so far this year, but they still have had to travel a lot, and that will help in terms of, one, them coming in and not being phased by being on the road and being in front of hopefully 1,200 rowdy people each and every game. But two, like, this is par for the course for them. And if the Pirates can take care of business against St. John's, then that will be very nice in terms of the resume being built.
As far as UNC is concerned, Corey, well, we had Mike Rooney, and I know you being a baseball expert, the ACC obviously is good every year. This year looks like they're going to get a ton of teams in and regionals and for the tournament. And when it comes down to it, it looks like UNC is under, obviously being a new coach, not saying this going to be a bad year for them, but if they could find a way to beat East Carolina, it's going to be a big for them.
Yeah, I think this matchup gets kind of skewed in many people's eyes, depending on the year, obviously, about, you know, if the Pirates can go into Chapel Hill and win on Tuesday, it's a great win. And if they can back it up with a win next Tuesday in Greenville, that's a great win. But I don't think enough people look at that matchup, particularly, you know, this year, and say this would be a great get for Carolina because of what the Pirates have done so far this year. I remember in 2019, there was a lot of talk about the Pirates didn't have kind of the marquee win. And so there was a lot of question about whether or not they deserved a national 8 seed because they didn't have that marquee win. Then they got a win at Carolina. And that seemed to quiet that down a little bit. And it wasn't until the conference tournament where that talk kind of went back into focus. But I think that as we head into Tuesday night, you will see, you know, D1 baseball kind of preview this matchup and maybe not necessarily frame it in the way that it should be framed. This should be a big game for the Tar Heels, and it should be next week as well, not just for the Pirates, because, you know, we're kind of past the age for most programs of, I guess, looking at scheduling East Carolina and wondering what the benefit would be of it. And that is a thing that still exists in some places. But, you know, Mike Fox previously, and now And now Scott Forbes right now, that they know, like they're very aware of what this program is here and what it could do for a North Carolina when they're battling in the grudge match that is the ACC. And yeah, they should be a tournament team, but when it comes to seeding purposes, when it comes to hosting a regional or going on the road like NC State a couple of years ago, they will look at the full body of work and say there's a split here between the Pirates and the Tar Heels, or say UNC grabs two over the next week and a half. That will stand out over what this Pirates team is going to be and should be this year. So I hope the narrative heading into this game frames it properly, that this is a opportunity for both of these schools to have a really good moment coming up in the next week and a half.
I hope it's the typical disrespect from the media and all our players read it.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it is challenging to keep players off of that stuff. I mean, some might be watching this right now. And so, it, you know, it's kind of
any of our players are watching it. I hear all the Tar Heel players say you suck and they're better than you just because they go to Chapel Hill and you couldn't get in there.
Wow.
What I heard them say.
Well, and I think there will be a bit of a different look to Tuesday night as opposed to previous midweek offers or even previous games, midweek games against Carolina, because the Pirates are going to go with Tyler Smith on Tuesday. And so now you're going to see a kind of a starting pitcher go on Tuesday night rather than a staff day. So that will provide a little bit of a different feel to this one when you have a fifth-year senior who has been down these paths before and is not concerned about who's seeing him and who he's going after. So there, you know, it's going to be slightly different than, say, UNCW or even Duke prior to that in terms of how the Pirates strategize for this game, because they're going with a fifth-year senior as a starting pitcher, and they're going to hopefully ride him as a starting pitcher, you know, take him to the middle innings and see what happens after that. So we're expecting a victory here. That's the goal each and every time out. But, you know, I would be floored if we see a repeat of Wilmington coming up on Tuesday night. I think that is also an understatement.
Yeah.
Corey, before we take a look around the American, some of the results this weekend, can you shed any light on the situation, obviously, at Duke in terms of attendance? I know that was a university decision. The state of North Carolina is at 30%. Know anything about Chapel Hill?
I don't know anything about what's going on at Chapel Hill, to be honest. I don't want to speculate as to what they might be doing. I just don't know what their scenario is. I don't think they have been. They let people into some basketball games at the tail end of the year, and so it wouldn't surprise me that they have some people in Bosham either.
Okay. I thought you
may Pirate fans are
be aware, but I just wanted to ask, since that's obviously a game that a lot of Pirate fans there in the Triangle or from the East or West would like to attend.
Yeah, and you know, UNCW had 500 seats available, and those were snatched up pretty quickly. Some, you know, there were maybe a smattering of Pirate fans that got in. Families got tickets, but I mean, not as many purple and gold were in Brooksfield as per usual. I would be surprised to, you know, it'd be great to see a great surprise to see a large contingent of purple and gold in Boshmer Tuesday night. But I'm going to imagine that tickets are going to be hard to come by for that one. So I keep an eye out on what North Carolina announces about what they're going to be doing for that game. But I don't have a firm idea as to how many they're letting into that place.
Great testament to our program there, Corey, to how well it doesn't matter what sport, Pirate fans are always there. And when you look around the state and you have all the in-state games, there's always guys like Bubba Rosenbaum, Gary Rosenbaum. There's a lot of Pirate fans that travel.
It's been noticed for years now when this team goes on the road, many places don't feel like road games. You know, when this team goes to Campbell or Elon or UNCW or what, you know, Duke games at the DBAP when fans are allowed, those are usually overflowing with Pirate fans. And, you know, over in the years past, Boshamer has been a pretty decent split in terms of fan contingent. Now, the last time I think the Pirates were there, there was a basketball celebration going on the same day. And so some Heel fans might have been over there at the Dean Dome But no, I mean, even on conference trips, I mean, there are contingents of fans and alumni that make the journey to wherever the Pirates go. And so they're going to be starting those trips here shortly. And as of right now, at least one place, Houston, has kind of lifted the lid on everything, and fans are in there, and Pirates will be in Florida here at the end of the year. And the Wichita is a big enough ballpark where there will be places for people to go there. And the only thing I don't know about what's going on in terms of fans is Cincinnati. So hopefully fans are able to go into those spots as well, because when the Pirates are on the road, it has rarely felt like they've been on the road here of late.
Bobby, you got some scores you want to go over?
Yeah, Corey, before we let you run, taking a look at what took place around the American this weekend, and get your thoughts on some of these if you had the chance to look at them. You know, Wichita State, they were playing down in DeLand at the Stetson tournament. They went 1-3. They lost a pair to FIU 11-2 and 9-2, and then split a pair with host Stetson, winning 11-8 and losing 9-4.
Wichita is frustratingly underwhelming so far. I think you can say that about, frankly, the bulk of the league right now. And seeing those types of weekends are a bit of an indicator as to how these teams might all look when league play starts. Because Wichita had a double dip on Friday, one with FIU, one with Stetson. They lost both of those, and then they beat Stetson yesterday. And then we'll get to Cincinnati here eventually as well. They're in a four-game series with Xavier, and so it's these types of weekends you can kind of get a little bit of understanding of how they might lay things out pitching-wise for conference play. And I would be lying if I said I wasn't I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed at some of the results this weekend from the conference. Because right now, I mean, we're not in league play yet. Things can balance out. It always happens. But right now, it's the Pirates and everyone else in the American right now.
One of the results that was certainly disappointing is what transpired between Houston and Oklahoma. The Cougars have been very competitive. Won a game against Texas, lost another, I think, by one run. But this week, or weekend, they got their doors blown off by Oklahoma, 7-2, 19-1, and 12-2.
And it's coming off of them getting kind of blown out by A&M at home as well earlier on in the week. So Houston had a really nice opportunity here this week to pick up, to notch a couple nice ones. And instead there were listen, I don't want to be cruel to, you know, 18 and 22-year-olds, but there were a couple no-show moments this week for Houston. I mean, I thought they had a chance in the A&M game at home this past week, and then just way too many miscues against a very good lineup. And then, you know, you would love to have seen one this weekend in Norman, but that didn't happen.
No USF, the Bulls are 9-8, 2-2 week. In the midweek, they had dropped a game to Stetson. And then FAU, they took 2 out of 3 from the Owls this weekend.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you a ton about USF, but they might be the most – this is going to sound cruel, and I apologize. They might be the most uninteresting team in the league right now. I mean, they cannot figure out their bullpen, which is frustrating. And so maybe by the time the Pirates see them in the last weekend of the year, then we're talking about a slightly better club. But they're frankly doing what was expected of them to start this year, sitting at the bottom of the league.
Memphis really struggled to start, but the Tigers, I think, have won 5 out of their last 6. They took 3 out of 4 from in-state foe Middle Tennessee this weekend.
And walked off of the win today to salvage or to grab 3 of 4. Streaky as I'll get out, middle of Memphis is right now. And that's why they sit 9-8, because they go up and down and up and down. And that's indicative of a pitching staff that's a little wobbly.
You referenced Cincinnati just a couple minutes ago. The Bearcats are 7-9. And they're playing that crosstown series with Xavier. Lost a 2-1 ball game in the opener of the series, and then bounced back, winning 22-7 before losing 16-8.
Wow!
And they have a game tomorrow to finish out this 4-game series, so that will again be telling, since they're the first ones up here in league play. about how they are navigating their pitching through a four-game series here. So keep an eye on things tomorrow between Cincinnati and Xavier.
Tulane is 9-10, and they went 1-3 this week. They won a midweek game against Texas Southern, but were swept by La Tech,
who just beat Arkansas and Ole Miss before going to New Orleans. La Tech is flying. Tulane cannot afford to lose games with Brayden Oldtoff on the mound on Fridays, and they did, because behind him, things get a little dicey. And so if they cannot grab opening games of series, then things get a little bit out of pocket for that crew down there, and that's what we saw this weekend.
And then UCF, the Knights are 9-10. What an up and down roller coaster of a season they've had thus far, winning that series at number one Ole Miss, then going, I think, 0-5 the following week. This week, they went 3-1, won a midweek game against FAU, and then took 2 out of 3 from Jacksonville.
Would love Greg Loveladies boys to not put all their eggs in the Ole Miss basket, because it felt like that for a while. They had a nice bounce back week here against Jacksonville, but that's a team that should be better than 9-10. That they should be up in the discussion right now at the top of the league. The fact that they're sitting last is maybe the most head scratching thing so far this year.
Boy, we know you have to run, but final thoughts in the last minute with you with the game coming up.
A sweep is hard. Don't take this for granted. Even though things looked a little bit dodgy at times this weekend, not everyone's doing what the Pirates are doing 19 games in the year. So enjoy this and understand just how special things have been so far this year.
Yep.
Yeah, no doubt. Sometimes I think fans of a team forget the other team's trying to win too.
Don't take it for granted. This is hard. What they've done this weekend was hard.
No doubt. And Tuesday night will be at 6 o'clock or 6:15 on the air.
6 o'clock, 5:45 the airtime. Join us.
All right. Appreciate you, Corey Glory. We'll see you next week on Extra Innings, buddy.
See you, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks, Have Corey. A good night. All right. Appreciate Corey Glory. Yeah, we've got PGX players of the game.
Awards he'll give out.
Yep. And Bubba, tell everybody we'll start off with the player of the game from pgxgloves.com. Who's the player this week? And we just lost Bubba this week.
Bubba will be back to give us the player of the week for pgxgloves.com. And you teased it earlier. Do you have the graphic or we need to wait for Bubba?
Well, I'll get that in just a second. We actually have four pgxgloves.com. We'll go ahead and talk about them or all that they do for us. In fact, I appreciate Mark Minakazi. You know, they have there we go. The custom baseball gloves, batting gloves, personalized youth. They have football gloves, golf gloves, swag. Our good friend Mark Minakazi, he's been a great friend of the show, and appreciate Kaz for all that he does for us. And just go to pgxgloves.com, and Kyle, they get the discount, right?
Yeah, you put in that promo code ECU at checkout, save yourself 25% on your order, and get yourself some custom gloves or some swag. Don't forget about the swag. And speaking of PGX gloves, Bubba, we have the PGX Gloves Player of the Week.
We do. I apologize for that battling some technical issues with my phone. I thought I was going to have to switch over to the laptop right quick, but we mentioned Thomas Francisco. What a week Franny had. 7 out of 15, 2 home runs, a double today, 6 RBIs and 2 walks. So Thomas Francisco just had a tremendous week. I think he's batting something like .350 now in the season, and Thomas Francisco doing what you would expect him to do, and hopefully that will continue as we play these final 5 non-conference games going into league play. Then on the mound, the PGXGloves.com Pitcher of the Week, Garrett Saylor. We talked about him coming in, earning the victory in relief in Saturday's ball game. 4 innings, a shutout baseball, didn't allow a hit, and struck out 5 while walking just a single batter. Huge to see Garrett pitch so well and get some confidence as we're closing in on play in the American.
Guys, you want to make it to Omaha, it's going to be performances like we saw from him. And Bubba, no doubt, Pitcher of the Week, PGX Pitcher of the Week, going to Garrett Saylor. More performances like that, it's going to help us on the back end. The season, guys, also want to remind fans that we're obviously do our extra innings every Sunday night. Want to remind friends, we have our spring football report, right, Bubba?
Yeah, when the Pirates practice this spring, we'll be bringing you that post-practice audio. So definitely subscribe on our YouTube channel as well as Facebook and wherever you tune in. Those practice reports will be strictly on YouTube and Facebook. And then we'll, of course, tweet out the link and share it on Instagram as well.
Yeah, and Houston's been very, very excited. You can hear the excitement in his voice. Very pleased with the energy so far in practice.
And don't forget also, fans, we have our Tuesday night and Thursday night show. But plus, Bubba, before we have our next extra innings show next Sunday night, brought to you by Next Level Training Center, and that's nextleveltc.com. I want to remind fans also that we're going to have On Deck with UNC coming up, and On Deck, our preview of also St. John's this week, right?
Yeah, we'll preview those matchups for the Tar Heels on our D1 baseball preview for the state of North Carolina. We caught up with Dave Nathan, their play-by-play voice. So we'll either have Dave Nathan back on, or head coach Scott Forbes. I'm still working on that, but we'll have one of those two. And then for St. John's, we'll do our best to bring in their head coach and talk about this weekend.
And by the way, fans, want to remind you, as always, before we go, one more thing. Guys, we want to remind everybody to subscribe to our YouTube channel. A lot of great content up there. Obviously, if you haven't liked our Facebook page, we'll do that. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's at the Sports OBJ. And Instagram is at the Sports Objective. Right, Bubba?
Yep. There it is in the bottom right of the screen if you're watching right now. And definitely be sure to follow and subscribe on those platforms. And, you know, like you were saying, we'll have tremendous content headed your way. And so just make sure you subscribe so you're alerted whenever that's posted.
All right. Well, anything before we go, guys? Do you have anything, Kyle?
I got nothing, guys. Just look forward to this week. Big, big week for baseball. Anytime you do battle with the Tar Heels, it's a big deal. And something I did want to point out during the show that's applicable in the weeks to come. I don't know how many conferences are doing 4-game conference series. Bubba, you can research that. But if it's not many, that could be a big advantage come regional time, because a lot of times you find yourself having to play double hitters in those regionals, particularly if you end up in a loser's bracket. So having to do that for the whole conference season could pay dividends come regional time.
No doubt about it. Bubba, do you have anything before we go?
No, that's an interesting point, Kyle, and I'll certainly dig into that if I have time between now and next week's extra innings, and we'll see what we can find out.
All right. Bubba, you can put that on the screen one more time. Pirates got the big games coming up on Tuesday night, and that'll be on the ACC Network. And, of course, our good friend Corey Glord will be 5:45 on the air. In Chapel Hill at North Carolina, then, of course, coming home to Greenville, and that'll be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we have a big homestand with St. John's, a big, big games coming up this week, as always, for the Pirates. All right, appreciate Corey Glor, play-by-play voice of the ECU Baseball Pirates. Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate you, buddy, and also Bubba Rosenbaum, and we will see you next time. You've been watching Extra Innings, brought to you by Next Level Training Center, right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
Dave has a place.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!